Hello everyone, Sylvain Chamberlain with you once again in the Lotus Lectures. We're about to start the Closing Sutra, which, there's a little bit of differences amongst the translations here. I actually want to read something from the late 1800s, written by H. Kern, this old translation that I've referred to several times. In the final chapter of his translation, named The Period of the Law, Dharma Pariyaya, there's a very, I've highlighted a paragraph which I think bears reading. And I will use it as an introduction to what is more commonly these days known as the Closing Sutra, or in this translation, the Sutra of Contemplation of the Dharma Practice of the Universal Sage Bodhisattva. You remember in my previous discussion on the Universal Sage Bodhisattva being that he is a personages or a personage of us, essentially, the Bodhisattvas of the Earth. And let's see what it's called in this. I have a lot of stuff highlighted in this translation. This is when I first started studying Dasani Purd. This is the Sutra of Meditation on the Bodhisattva Universal Virtue. So in this case, it's Bodhisattva Universal Virtue. In the current translation that I'm reading from, it's the Universal Sage Bodhisattva. These are all interpretation of the same namesake, I guess we could call it, as we understand now that all the writings in the sutras are basically personages of our human mindful activity, our potential, our ways of thinking, the way our minds work. So keeping that in mind, I just want to read this one paragraph from H. Kern in the final chapter of this translation of the sutra. Actually, I'm going to start before because it kind of leads into it. Thereupon, the Lord Shakyamuni, the Tathagata, rose from his pulpit, collected the bodhisattvas, took their right hands and his own right hand, which had become strong by the exercise of magic, and spoke on that occasion as follows: "Into your hands, young men of good family, I transfer and transmit and trust and deposit this supreme and perfect enlightenment arrived at by me after hundred thousands of myriads of codas of incalculable eons. Ye young men of good family, do your best that it may grow and spread." A second time, a third time, the Lord spoke to the host of bodhisattvas after taking them by the right hand. "Into your hands, young men of good family, I transfer and transmit and trust and deposit this supreme and perfect enlightenment arrived at by me after hundred thousands of myriads of codas of incalculable eons. Receive it, young men of good family, keep, read, fathom, teach, promulgate, and preach it to all beings. I am not avaricious, young men of good family, nor narrow-minded. I am confident and willing to impart Buddha knowledge, to impart the knowledge of the Tathagata, the knowledge of the self-born. I am a bountiful giver, young men of good family, and ye, young men of good family, follow my example." Now this is critical here. "Imitate me in liberally showing this knowledge of the Tathagata and in skillfulness, and preach this Dharmapariyaya to the young men and young ladies of good family who successively shall gather round you. And as to unbelieving persons, rouse them to accept this law. By doing so, young men of good family, you will acquit your debt to the Tathagatas." So, in that one or two paragraphs, rests the final exhortation of the Lotus Sutra, Be bodhisattvas. Be like me, the Buddha. Be like me, an ordinary man, Siddhartha Gautama, determined to figure out how to liberate all human life from the bounds of suffering, whatever that suffering is, be it painful thoughts, painful disease, insecurity, whatever sufferings you encounter in life are the result of your own attachments. A great wash of letting go of all this delusion of permanence and attachment and craving will release you from the predisposition to having things, whether they be material or spiritual or whatever form. Expectation is your downfall. Expect instead to not expect. Expect only this moment and revel in it. Revel in that which you experience. That truly is the life experience. Everything else is an anchor to create discontentment, dis-ease. The word disease, dis-ease. Dis-ease precipitates from false expectation. False expectation constantly follows craving, desire. Rather than desire, cut that short into simply experience. Experience the wonder of all life processes. There it is, encapsulated in a very simple translation. So now, obviously more was written about this, and rather than tack it on to the Lotus Sutra as yet another chapter in the, because it's pretty much, the teaching is finalized at this point. Then this remaining sutra, rather than chapter, kind of surmises, once again, there's a lot of summation in all of this, but and we see it as repetition, but again, innumerable ways, right? Skillful means. How many ways can I describe this so that there will be one word, one sentence, one verse, one gatha that will grab the attention of somebody who has yet to find a firm foothold or grasp of what I'm trying to teach here, right? And in fact, you could say the Parinirvana Sutra, spoken by Shakyamuni on his deathbed, was yet in the final moments, yet another attempt to guide people to the Lotus Sutra and their own study and understanding in order to bring about their full enlightenment. That to do it alone is extremely difficult. To do it with others, the Bodhisattva way, is far more expeditious. It's not always available, it's not always easy, but the very effort to go that route is enough to make tremendous change in one's own self-perception and the perception, therefore, of all life, right? Okay, so the Sutra of Contemplation of the Dharma Practice of Universal Sage Bodhisattva. We'll go with that title for now. I encourage you, keep on practicing and studying. I'm dedicating a lot of time to this Lotus Sutra because it is the central teaching of Mahayana. In here, what we're going to really review is the method of practice post Shakyamuni's life, after his extinction. Study, practice, concentration, purification of the six senses. That's what we're going to cover in this closing sutra. So again, it's kind of a review, but yet from another perspective, and basically saying, you, universal sage bodhisattva that we all are, bodhisattvas of the earth that we all are. If you prefer the title, what was the other one? The Universal Virtue. This is what I heard. At one time, the Buddha was staying in the kingdom of Vaisali, in the multi-storied assembly hall of the Great Forest Monastery. He said to all the monks, after 3 months, surely I will enter complete nirvana. Then the Venerable Ananda rose from his seat, straightened his robe, put his palms together, and circled round the Buddha 3 times. Kneeling with his palms together, he said, he paid his respects, gazing at the Tathagata attentively, without turning away for even a moment. Mahakasyapa, the elder, and Maitreya Bodhisattva, the great one, also rose from their seats, and with palms together, gazing up at his honored face, paid respects to the Buddha. So basically, again, these are personages. So he's talking about the most studied, the most developed amongst his students are now paying attention. This represents our ichinin, our will, our volition, our desire, our commitment to full enlightenment, to understand this teaching. I keep doing this because I want you to understand, don't get lost in the words. Get lost, if you will, in the meaning of the imagery of attention and respect to what is about to be taught, to your understanding. Then the three great leaders spoke to the Buddha in one voice. So that's a great determination, isn't it? World-honored one, after the extinction of the Tathagata, how can living beings aspire to the Bodhisattva, follow the Great Vehicle Sutras, the expansive teaching, and think about the world of one truth correctly? How can they keep from losing their aspiration for unexcelled awakening without cutting off their afflictions and renouncing the five desires? How can they purify their sense organs and completely rid themselves of their sins? With the natural pure eyes received at birth from their parents and without leaving the world of the five desires, how can they see past their hindrances? Now, this is a key statement. And it leads to something I've also kept repeating that is missed by a tremendous amount of students of Buddhism, that Buddhahood, enlightenment, full enlightenment, is not something we attain to after we die. It's not some other place. It's not, it's not something other. And in this question, it is made very clear that we finally, after all this teaching, get it. That what Buddha has been saying all along is that this is a change in your perception right now, as a human with all the sense organs, with all the birth, the eyes that you receive from your parents isn't entirely true, right? That's still an obstacle because there's three in a birth. There's mom, dad, and you. Your eyes, they're combined with the eye consciousness, the vision consciousness of your mother and father. But they're combined with yours, your tendencies and conditions. The child is a third entity. It's not just a precipitated entity of mother and father DNA. There's a third DNA there, and they all mix and coalesce to make that new human. This is the concept of Ichinin Sanzen. This is the concept of 3,000 realms in a single thought moment. We are continuums in the process of life. We're not a bag of stuff, but we are an individuation of energies that combine where they fit naturally. You might call that attraction, but that's starting to impose an emotional component to what is basically just a function. Okay? And so what these people are asking Buddha is, look, we're just this function, and we have all these tendencies and conditions that are impossible to overcome because they're part of the process of us instantiating, living, and dying and dissipating. How do we do it without your guidance? With you gone, how can we see clearly? Because we have all these obfuscations. Good question, right? So the Buddha says to Ananda, listen carefully, listen carefully. Consider what I'm about to say and remember it well. Long ago, on Holy Eagle Peak and in other places, the Tathagata has already thoroughly explained the way of the one truth. Right? The Lotus Sutra has already done this. So why are you asking me? But now in this place, for all living beings and others in the future who want to practice the unsurpassable Dharma of the Great Vehicle, and for those who want to learn the practice of Universal Sage and follow the practice of Universal Sage, I will now teach this method of contemplation. For all those who are able to see Universal Sage, as well as for those who do not see him, I will now explain in detail how to eliminate evils. So for all of those who understand intellectually how Buddhism works, for all of those who get it as to a process to be practiced, to be studied, I'm now going to share with you how to contemplate, how to meditate, how to concentrate your mind so that you can eliminate, what are the evils? Your obstacles, your tendencies. Once again, we already know this, is stop focusing on the tendencies. Let them happen. Just let them happen. They're tendencies. You're water running down. Gravity, you're a river, you're going to the ocean, okay? You can't deny that that's what you are, a human. But what you can do is change your perception of all of those tendencies and conditions, your rambling water over the rocks on your way down to the ocean. You can remove yourself from it objectively with your mind and simply observe it with great fascination and appreciation instead of emotional reaction to every rock you hit as you head down the stream. This is the path to enlightenment. It's already there. You're just preoccupied with all the stuff. That's what craving and desire does. That's what the monkey mind does. All it knows is want. And want equals have. If you just let it go, you'll see that having has no basis. That desiring has no basis. That it's a preoccupation of the mind. Let it go. Been having all kinds of computer trouble lately. Nothing seems to want to work. Passwords don't work. They don't remember them. Blah, 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 on and on to the point where I want to go crazy. And then I remind myself, oh yeah, this is all silliness. It'll work to some fashion. Or if it doesn't, I don't need it. It's a preoccupation. So, look at me. After decades of practice, I still have to remind myself, oh yeah, silly, silly human. All right. The blessings of this contemplation will eliminate their hindrances and allow them to see the excellence and wonderful form of the Buddha. What is the excellence and wonderful form of the Buddha? To simply observe the experience of the life process. It knocks you down. How amazing it is. But only if you allow yourself to reveal it, allow yourself to experience it, allow yourself to appreciate it, allow yourself to laugh about it. even though they have not yet entered into concentration, just because they recite and embrace the great vehicle, they will devote themselves to studying it and putting it into practice, and after keeping their attention continuously on the great vehicle for one day or for 3 weeks, they will be able to see Universal Sage. What again is Universal Sage? Universal Sage is our human instantiation experiencing the Buddha way. It's another way to talk about Bodhisattva practice. It's another way of saying enlightenment while in this samsaric human form. Not about elsewhere, not about aspiration, about revealing what's already there while you're here, while you're experiencing it. Perceive correctly. How do you do that? Embrace the great vehicle, devote yourself to study it, putting it into practice, keeping their attention continuously. These are not easy things to do, but I promise you, if you study at least a part of it every day, just spend 30 minutes, chant, meditate, it will stay in your mind more and more throughout the day. You'll be able to catch yourself. And I guarantee you, you will have moments in the middle of a store or traffic or wherever you are, and you just burst out laughing. Because our preoccupations are so ridiculous. But they seem so deadly serious when we're in the midst of them, don't they? Yeah. Those who have heavy hindrances will see him after 7 weeks. So what he's demonstrating here with time is basically telling you that you don't just read it and go, aha, I get it. It takes effort. And the effort depends on your particular hindrances. We all have specific aspects to our karma. Some of our tendencies are so, so deeply within our complete biomorphic makeup, our DNA. And others are rather simple. They annoyingly come up, maybe consistently or often, but they're easy to overcome. But we need to pay attention that that's what we're doing, is overcoming them. We need to understand what that really is and what that's an indicator of, right? Those who have heavier hindrances will see him after one lifetime. So there you go. That doesn't mean it takes your whole life to become enlightened, to understand the Buddha way. For some, it may. And those are the people, by the way, that when we encounter them, we might want to help and shorten that span, not of their lifetime, but of the time it takes for them to awaken fully. But certainly working along the way, they have small awakenings, right? I mean, we're not doing all of this so that we have the one great payoff. It's not like a football game. It's more like Aristotle said, of happiness. Working toward the great goal is itself happiness, because every step we take toward it, we know the expectation. We've adjusted our expectation to it. So every step we take gets us that much closer to our unfathomable goal. And therefore, every step we take is itself a manifestation of happiness, of joy. Whatever struggle we may encounter, if our goal is clear, then we can navigate it with little effort or with strength, whatever strength is required, because our goal of full enlightenment, Buddhahood, is clear, And the clarity of that goal depends completely on our diligent study and contemplation. So even from Aristotle, we can see that the Buddhist teachings have complete merit in a way to live a life well lived. Make sense? And those who have yet heavier hindrances will see him after three lifetimes. Thus, past actions have a variety of consequences. They are not always the same. This is why I teach in a variety of ways. So, again, he's talking about the teachings. The body of Universal Sage Bodhisattva is unlimited. The range of his voice is unlimited. And the forms of his image are unlimited. When he wants to come into this world, he uses his own divine powers to shrink his body to a smaller size because the three hindrances of the people in Jambudvipa are heavy. Through the power of his own wisdom, he transforms himself and rides a white elephant. Now we're getting into the hyperbole again, right? The multiple lifetimes and all that stuff. It's really about this lifetime. And any one of you who's lived past the age of 40 knows you can think back to your pre-puberty years, to your post-puberty years, to your high school, to your college years. And you can know that those were other lifetimes because you're no longer those people. In biology and in mind. Remember, all our cells are replaced at every 7 years. So we physically are not the same person. So take it away, take it apart any way you like. Multiple lifetimes is something we experience in this samsaric life. All right? It's a mental distinction. The elephant has six tusks and is supported by seven legs. Under its seven legs are seven live lotus flowers. The elephant is as white as snow, the most brilliant of whites. Even its crystal or the Himalayas cannot be compared with it. The body of the elephant is 450 leagues long and 400 leagues tall. The elephant, a very sacred animal in Western Asia and Central Asia. So the imagery here is to be understood as the grandeur of these realizations. And the process of life itself. At the tips of these six tusks are six bathing pools, and in each bathing pool grow 14 lotus flowers, filling them all equally. The flowers bloom majestically like the king of a heavenly foliage. On each of these flowers sits a jade maiden with a crimson face surpassing even that of a goddess. In the hands of each of the maidens, five harps appear spontaneously, each accompanied by 500 other musical instruments, 500 birds as colorful as precious gems, including wild ducks, wild geese, the mandarin ducks, are among the leaves and flowers. On the elephant's trunks, there is a flower with a stalk the color of red pearl. The flower itself is gold in color and looks like a bud that has not yet blossomed. After witnessing this, if anyone continues to repent and contemplate the great vehicle sincerely, unceasingly pondering it over it with clear vision, they will be able to see the flower bloom and radiate a golden color. So what is this hyperbole about? It says no matter what your hindrances are, no matter how attached you are to white elephants and lotus flowers, picture this immense vision of grandeur beyond your earthly means and perceptions. And see at the end of this succession of great and miraculous visions, this lotus flower that's not yet bloomed, your enlightenment, your mind. And focus diligently on your study of the Buddha's teachings. Read them and contemplate them every day. And this bud will suddenly blossom. That is the method of the great white Lotus Flower Sutra. The whole analogy in the name, the wonderful Dharma flower, here it is being explicated in all this wonderful hyperbole. Follow? In case you didn't notice, I just plugged my laptop in because the battery's going to do it. Okay. You should be used to me doing that by now. The calyx of the lotus flower is made of kimshuko jewels and wonderful and pure money jewels. Its stamens are made of diamonds. A transformed Buddha can be sitting on the calyx of the lotus flower with a host of bodhisattvas sitting on the stamens. From between the eyebrows of the transformed Buddha comes a golden light which goes into the elephant's trunk with the color of the red lotus flower. This light comes out the elephant's trunk and enters its eyes. Then it shines from the elephant's eyes and enters its ears. It then comes out of the elephant's ears and illuminates the top of its head and changes into a golden platform. On the elephant's head are 3,000 transformed attendants. One has a gold wheel in his hands, another holds a mani jewel, another grasps a diamond pounder. When the attendant raises the pounder and points it at him, the elephant immediately takes a few steps. The elephant does not step on the ground, but hovers in the air 7 feet above the earth, yet it leaves its footprints on the ground. The footprints have in them a dharma wheel with a hub and 1,000 spokes, all of them perfect. In each dharma wheel is a great lotus flower on which there is a transformed elephant. These elephants also have 7 legs and walk behind the great elephant. Every time one of the elephants raises its springs down its foot, 7,000 elephants appear, all following behind the great elephant, and on and on and on. This vision is meant to quite literally expand the boundaries of your imagination, your mind. Stop staying stuck on what's visibly in front of you, because that vision is made of cravings and desires. Your very vision, the things that you see in life, are colored, yes, colored by forms and imaginations you've come to expect. They are expectations. You know this, because every now and again in life, you look at something that's so unexpected that you can't make sense of it. It confuses you. You look away. You shake your head. You look back. This is your Buddha awareness fighting your samsaric, human, craving, desirous, monkey mind attachments. What if you could just see that before it takes you over? What if you could see that happening? What if you could see it happening and laugh at it and go, man, that's amazing, and see right over it? That's what we're talking about here. That's contemplation. That's seeing. That's being Bodhisattva Universal Virtue or Universal Sage or whatever you want to call yourself. And it goes on and on and on. A highlighted portion I have here, the elephant walks deliberately and carefully. Deliberately and carefully. Your Buddha mind doesn't wait for things to happen to it. We live our lives in a great state of reaction because we have expectation. So when we have expectation, we really don't truly think or act until we run into it. But the Buddha mind sees everything clearly. It doesn't wait to be emotionally triggered. It just sees. You see, I see. Going slowly, he pours large jeweled lotus flowers before a follower. When this elephant opens its mouth, the jade maidens in the bathing pools on the elephant's tusks play fine and wonderful music that praises the one true way of the great vehicle. Having seen this, the follower rejoices and shows respect, again reading and reciting the profound sutras, showing respect to the innumerable Buddhas in all directions, wherever they may be, to the Stupa of Abundant Treasures Buddha, to Shakyamuni Buddha, and to Universal Sage and other great bodhisattvas. Then the follower makes this wish. If I have any blessings stored up, surely I should see Universal Sage soon. Honorable Universal Fortune, please show me your physical body. Having made this wish, followers should show respect to the Buddhas in all directions 6 times, day and night, and practice the teaching of repentance, repentance being attachment to our earthly desires, right? Followers should read the Great Vehicle Sutra and recite them, thinking about the meaning of the Great Vehicle and reflecting on its practice. Reverence should be given and offerings made to those who embrace it. All people should be regarded as though they were the Buddha, and all living beings as though they were one's father and mother. This is the deep, profound sense of appreciation that when we first start practicing seems so incredibly unfathomable. Again, Aristotle. It seems unattainable. But with that goal in mind, it will happen. It will just pop it. Like you pop a balloon, you'll suddenly see. Hanging on to it while we're human in samsara can be difficult. This is what we mean by diligence. Gotta stay at it because it's there. It's always been there. We just need to reveal it. Even if only for a moment, then we know, right? While a follower is reflecting in this way, Universal Sage Bodhisattva will immediately send forth a ray of light from the true tuft of white hair between his eyebrows, which is the sign of a great man. With the appearance of this light, the body of Universal Sage Bodhisattva will become as dignified as a mountain of purple gold, so well ordered and refined that it has the 32 characteristics. From the pores of his body will emanate great rays of light, illuminating the great elephant and turning it into the color of gold. All transformed elephants will be gold colored as well. He's talking about our own self-perception. When your perception clears, if only for a moment, not only do you perceive everything correctly, but your humanness becomes free of all of its expectations, desires, and so on. Remember energy? And we just see everything as light, gold, purple, whatever you want to call it, like photons, energy. It could be disarming to sense this. So study helps you stay, in a way, grounded as you experience this. And I laugh because, once again, here's this proof. In the hyperbole itself, that awakening, enlightenment, Buddha way, is something that can only be experienced in this human form. Think of it this way. If not in this human form, what benefit would there be to experiencing it? The more you meditate on that, the more you will understand how amazingly grand an opportunity it is to be a human. How infinitesimally small the chances are of your instantiation is in the first place, and the incalculable measure of experience this opportunity is to observe it rather than to be just sucked into it and spat out by its undertow. Because that's how many people live life. I've heard it said in other ways that people simply plummet through life, waiting for things to happen to them. And trying more or less to respond, if at all, to what happens to them. What an incredibly sad missed opportunity. When, as we are in this short, brief moment of the life process, instantiated as an experiencing human consciousness, we can discover the true nature of universes beyond the one that we're in, experiences far beyond what we are manifestations of, far greater than our infinitesimal little speck of time and space and substantiality. Immeasurable indeed. Then, by the power of concentration by which the Buddhas appeared in the beauty of preaching of the universal sage Bodhisattva, with their ears followers will gradually hear sounds without hindrance, their eyes will gradually see things without hindrance, and their noses will gradually smell odors without hindrance. This is as taught extensively in the wonderful Dharma Flower Sutra in the Myoho Renge Kyo. Having purified the six organs, a follower will be joyous in body and mind and free of evil ideas, devoting oneself to this Dharma so that it can be complied with. A follower will acquire again 100,000 myriad millions of revolving incantations and will again see hundreds of thousands of myriads of millions of innumerable Buddhas everywhere. These world-honored ones will reach out with their right hands, laying them on the heads of followers, and will say, "Good, good, you are a follower of the great vehicle. You aspire to great adornment. You keep the great vehicle in mind. Long ago, when we aspired to become awakened, we also were like that. You should firmly keep this aspiration without losing anything, because we practiced the great vehicle in previous lives. We now have the pure bodies of the truly awakened. Now you should practice diligently and never be lazy." These great vehicle sutras are the Buddha's storehouses of Dharma. They are the eyes of the Buddhas in all directions and in the past, present, and future. And they are the seeds that give birth to Tathagatas in the past, present, and future. One who embraces these sutras embraces the body of the Buddha and does the work of the Buddha. Such a person should understand that he or she has been sent by the Buddhas and are covered by robes of Buddhas, the world-honored ones. This is a child of the true Dharma of the Buddhas, the Tathagatas. Practice the great vehicle and do not cut off the seeds of Dharma. Now carefully contemplate the Buddhas in the eastern direction. This could be said to be the very dedication given at Gojukai when you are earthly attached to your Gohonzon. I'm going to save the remainder. There isn't a whole lot, but I'm going to save the remainder for another video. I thank you for listening. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo Namu Myoho Renge Kyo Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Take good care of yourselves.